I won't deny it, I'm a straight rider. You don't wanna fuck with me. Got the police barking at me, but they can't do nothing to me.
We're going to change direction for Canada's Pinball Podcast. I'm going to stop talking about the news. I'm going to stop talking about all the drama and all the different manufacturers out there. And I'm going to focus this podcast on local pinball tournaments. I know it's what you guys really want to hear. You want to hear about each one of my balls in a local tournament play and how I hit that right orbit shot over and over again for the multiplier. No, you don't. All right, let's get back to our normal programming on Canada's Pinball Podcast. So on episode 136, I want to talk about my last podcast a little bit, and I want to talk about some of the feedback I got. I heard from a lot of you guys out there that the old Canada's back. It was so nice to have you unhinged again and speaking your mind after the Dutch pinball webinar that we saw on Monday. And I have to say, it wasn't fun. I don't like going off the rails a little bit, but I tell it like it is. This podcast will always tell it like it is. And my mind hasn't changed on anything that I said. I'm not apologizing for anything I articulated on that podcast, okay? I still think that Dutch pinball is sort of dead in the water. I think they are going to flounder, and I think they are going to draw this out for a really, really long time. I also think that a lot of people out there are just not going to learn the lesson, that they're going to continue to support these guys even though they've continued to take your money, tell you lies, and not deliver. And let me, you know, I went on to Pinside, and just 14 hours ago, this was after my podcast. This was after the webinar. 14 hours ago, I read stuff like this on Pinside from Pinside user Nikonokin. I don't even know how you pronounce it. He wrote this. I actually found the live stream helpful. Sincere. It changed my stance. Yeah, this is not ideal, but tearing them down isn't going to help the matter. Here's what I sent to the guys. I'd like to apologize for my refund request earlier today. I'm emotional about the potential loss of my $8,500. However, after listening again to your live stream, I'm in. I want to see the Big Lebowski through. I appreciate the nightmare you are in, and I will be in it and shut my mouth and let you work through it. Also, fuck ARA and their horseshit manipulative parent company. 51%? Ha. They can eat 51% of our dick. I'm glad you didn't take the deal and believe you tried to do what is in all of our best interests. Thanks for the better communication, the live stream, the weekly updates. It helps. Eagerly and respectfully awaiting the Big Lebowski, number 52. I believe in you guys. Your dream is our collective dream, and I want to see it come to fruition. You can do it, number 52. Okay. So, you know what? That's exactly what I was talking about in my podcast. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what people say. It doesn't matter the facts on the table. All that matters is that you put a dream theme in front of people and they accept whatever they're told about the status of the game, about the health of the company, and it gets old, and it gets really old, and it gets really tiring. And I've decided, you know what, we shouldn't focus so much maybe on all of these train wrecks all the time, because as I've predicted, I don't think there's going to be many more than three pinball companies that survive into 2018 and that are healthy and surviving into 2018. Now, the more and more I think about it, if you were to ask me which pinball companies, Canada, do you think are actually going to survive and do really well going into 2018. And I always have this number of three. There's going to be three. Now, obviously, Stern is going to be a company that I think survives and does well into the future. I think Jersey Jack will also do well into the future. I think their investment backing, and I think Dialed In is actually going to do better than people think, because it's going to have great word of mouth, and it's just in a class of its own. There's no way you can say that there's a pinball machine that provides better quality than a Jersey Jack machine in the hobby. So I think, look, if you create something of value, the money will come. And I think Jack has created a value proposition that no one is matching him on. So I think he's going to do okay. So here's where I've been struggling, is who becomes the third manufacturer that is going to do all right and move with these other two? Is it going to be Spooky? Is it going to be Homepin? Is it going to be PPS? Is it going to be P3? Is it going to be American Pinball? Who's it going to be, right? And look, this is all purely speculation. If you think this is based on any knowledge I have of what's going on with these companies, you're wrong. But I think that at the end of the day, when I look at what's happening, I have to say that my third choice for a company that's going to tough it out and be fine is PPS, is Planetary Pinball and Chicago Gaming. With their remake of Attack from Mars remake, I think orders for these classic games remade with better technology, with better displays, they'll be fine, because they've hedged their bets. They're building games they know people love. They're building games they know command a high price, and they're enhancing them. So it's like a no-brainer. You know, it's like they're digitally enhancing or remastering classic movies we all love. We're still going to want to watch them, right? We're still going to want to play Attack from Mars, Medieval Madness. If they make Cactus Canyon, if they make Tales of the Arabian Nights, if they make Kingpin or Big Bang Bargain, I mean, forget it. The amount of titles they have in their arsenal to bring out, I think they're always going to have buyers. You'll notice that I sort of shifted Spooky out of that sort of definite third position. And I did that because I do think, and I saw a thread on Pinside that where someone basically asked, does anyone really want Alice Cooper Pinball? And it was sort of a troll bait thread. I don't know if you saw it. They locked it. I love how Robin locked that thread and won't let people continue to talk about it. But the question is a fair question, is does anyone really want an Alice Cooper pinball machine? And for the most part, most people say no. And they're not really into the theme. And a lot of people that I talk to, a lot of people that hit me up, they all think the theme is a bit of a misstep, and they're really curious whether or not there's going to be a market for it. But again, this is not like an Alice Cooper music pin, right? This isn't just Alice Cooper songs playing, and each mode is a song. It's not about that. It's the Nightmare Castle part of it, right? This is Spooky's attempt to create a sort of Elvira and the Party Monster, sort of Scared Stiff, sort of a modern day sort of Scared Stiff, with Alice Cooper as sort of the caretaker of this haunted castle. So, but I've said it. I just think that this theme is going to be really challenging for Charlie to find a following. You know, I don't think it's going to have that sort of I need to have it unless the game is great. Now, the question becomes is how does Charlie make a great pinball machine? How does he add more to the game and keep the price at a level that's competitive? See, that's the real elephant in the room. And I've been going back and forth about how much it costs to make a pinball machine and how does a company price a machine properly to not just get you the game, but also stay in business, stay profitable. Because you need more money than just what it costs to make that game. You need money to then reinvest in your next title, to keep the company going, to pay the wages, to pay the electrical bill, to pay the R&D for the next game, all that stuff, right? So something I want to bring up, and someone I know really well has been talking to me offline, and he said, look, Chris, if you remember what Jack said when you interviewed him, He basically said the bomb for the Wizard of Oz was $7,000. So the bomb for Oz was $7,000, and Jack was initially selling the Wizard of Oz at $6,500. So that means Jack was potentially losing $500 for every single Wizard of Oz machine that he sold early on. Now, you add on the other delays and whatnot to getting the Wizard of Oz out there, you know, board issues, this and that, and then you start to realize that the loss per game was far more than $500. And my friend said to me this. He said, Chris, you're ripping on Star Wars Pro. You're ripping on Stern quality, but you don't get it. Stern makes games to stay in business. Stern doesn't make games just to create a game regardless of profitability, regardless of deadlines, regardless of like the bomb, right? So he said to me this, take the Wizard of Oz. Take the Wizard of Oz, which has a $7,000 bomb, and strip out of it $3,000 in parts, okay? Take out $3,000 in the elements of the Wizard of Oz. What do you have? What would Wizard of Oz look like? And he said to me, the Wizard of Oz would look like Star Wars Pro if you removed $3,000 worth of parts and features from the game. Okay? Because then you get the bomb to $4,000 and you charge, you know, around $5,000, $5,500 to make some money on the game. And I think when I looked at it that way, and when I really heard what he was saying to me, it kind of made total sense that we've got these companies now. We've got Big Lebowski. We've got Alien. We had JJP. All these companies that came into the pinball world and had no idea what it would cost to make their machines. They priced their machines often before they even understood what it would cost to make. And they struggled. They struggled. And we look at Stern, and I know I'm the first offender of this, is we look at Stern and we say how cheap they are, how disappointed we are, and they're removing features, this and that, this and that, this and that. I'm not happy with the lack of features on the new Stern LE and Star Wars and whatnot. But at the end of the day, to keep a company going, can you do it without charging a lot more than what Stern charges for machines? And I've said it time and time again. I think the only way boutique manufacturers can survive is if they add a lot more value, but their games are going to cost more, but then you're targeting the home collector only, and that's fine. I mean, Dialed In being an operator's game at $9,000, $8,000, I mean, why would an operator put that in their location when they could put a $5,000 Star Wars in, which is almost half the price, and will probably get equal, if not more, plays simply because it's Star Wars, right? So there's that part of it all. So, look. I mean, in final conclusion, I just want to say this: when I read people still supporting Dutch pinball, I think Dutch just got in over their heads. I think they learned a lesson about manufacturing. I think Highway Pinball learned the same lesson. It's just really hard to make these games. And I don't want to be the podcaster that comes out and just is like screaming about how stupid these companies are and how stupid people are for supporting them. I want to tell it like it is and tell you how I feel about it. And I guess I'm just in this place now. And I'm in this place where I just don't feel like anything really moves me in pinball right now. And I don't feel like anything out there like truly, fully excites me. I feel like everything that I see on the horizon in the pinball world, everything I know that's coming out, everything that's currently available, everything comes with a compromise. I have to compromise what I'd really want in each of the games. I love the Dialed In quality. I love the originality of it. I love the shots of it. But I have to compromise on the fact that it is a machine about cell phones, and the theme is kind of weird. And will I, once you beat dialed in, will you want to go back time and time again? Because I don't think it's going to have the same long-lasting appeal as blowing up the Death Star over and over again. Completing the modes in Star Wars will always remain fun and always be rewarding on a different level, because we have such an emotional draw to the movies of Star Wars and those scenes occurring in those movies. So that's my concern about dialed in. Star Wars is just another thing where, you know, I love the movies to death. I think the world they put under the glass of that game lacks, you know, imagination. I really do. I think the game just doesn't pop for me right now. And I know I'm saying this without seeing the gameplay, but is that my fault that I haven't seen the gameplay? What is it, 3 weeks now since we've seen the reveal of Star Wars and we're still waiting? We don't really know when Jack Danger is going to play it, and games are going to roll out probably before we even see any of the premium or LE gameplay footage. Distributors are asking for money and no one has even played it. I'll say this, and I love my guy JJ over at Game Exchange, and when I told you in the last podcast that I was out on Star Wars, I hit him up and he said, "Chris, you know, I'm happy to refund your money, but I think you're making a mistake. I think you're really going to make a mistake, and I think you should hold on and wait to see what the gameplay is like. And I can still refund your money, but there's you know," he basically was saying, "you don't have to get your refund right now. Like, you can wait to see what the game plays like and then make up your mind." And that's why JJ's a great guy. And, you know, so right now, I heard him say that, and I said, "Okay, cool. Give me a few days to think about it." I kind of felt like we would see gameplay by the end of this week. So I almost want to wait a little bit and see what gameplay is like, because if the gameplay changes all of our minds, I could be back in. And that's not me being a hypocrite. I still think Stern took too many items out of the game. But it's still Star Wars, and it's still something I love. And I'm at the end of the day, I just still think theme is almost everything. I really do. I remember how much I loved Lord of the Rings and how much Lord of the Rings kept me coming back time and time again. Whereas Tales of the Arabian Nights, even though that game was built better, even though that game had, I think, even more magic going on under the glass, there just wasn't... I always felt when I played Toten that the modes were just numb. That even though, like, the lights were cool, even though the vanishing magnet was cool, the genie bash was awesome, I loved, like, spinning the lamp, all that stuff was cool, I just didn't really have any emotional attachment to the modes themselves, and the carpet ride and the tale of Scheherazade and all these things. And they don't mean as much to me as getting the Fellowship members across the bridge, or destroying the ring, or defeating Balrog, right? So all of that sort of connection I had emotionally to Lord of the Rings made that game so much more rewarding. And I don't think there's any movie out there, or any movie series out there, where people have more of an emotional connection than Star Wars. So I want to see more. And I think the lack of news, the lack of seeing Star Wars played, has made my podcast more challenging for me, because I'm bummed out. I'm bummed out that we're still sort of just in this limbo period, in this holding period. So I hope to see more on that. What else is, like, do I want to talk about in this episode? So a couple of news items. So Predator, the thread has been blowing up recently because there's a new court document that was released, and inside it, I think it's something like 80 plus pages, but I'll summarize. Basically, VirtuaPen, who made the cabinets for Kevin Kulik, these guys now want to sue Keith, the lawyer, who is suing Kevin on behalf of the people who got ripped off by Kevin. So let me reiterate that. So Kevin Kulik went to VirtuaPen to make cabinets for Predator. And Virtua Pen at one point said, "We are never going to make cabinets or accept money unless the license is intact for this property." They lied. They took money from Kevin. So Kevin funneled money to them, and they made a few cabinets, but they never ended up like, you know, obviously finishing the game and getting games out to people. And so now these guys say that their business has been hurt by all the Pinside mob and all the people saying that it's not right that these guys got money from Kevin, and now they want to sue the lawyer who's trying to get people made whole. It's despicable. It's pathetic. It's just another example of a pinball company that finds themselves in a bad business situation. And instead of doing the right thing, like Virtua Pin people should be saying, "You know what? We got duped by Kevin too. But what we did for him cost money, it cost time, it cost labor, and he paid us for our work. It's not our fault that he didn't have the license. It's not our responsibility to ensure that he had that. We did the work he paid us for, and we don't feel like we should have to give that money back because we did the job." Instead, I think these guys are taking the wrong approach, and I think they're going to be completely crucified by the forum and by the Pinside community and by the pinball collector community. And they have no one else to blame but themselves. They have nobody else to blame but themselves, and I think now they've taken the complete wrong approach, and I think they're going to be absolutely annihilated in the court of public opinion. Suing a lawyer is probably the dumbest thing you can do, especially suing a lawyer that drives a Lamborghini. Even dumber, right? Kevin Kulik will drag everybody he's associated himself with down with him. It is not going to end well. It will not end well. What else? So I heard another rumor, and this was just in some of the threads, that Lyman Sheets is now working on other projects besides Batman 66. And it's interesting now because we're starting to see some Batman 66 games up for sale. As I mentioned on the last podcast, there is a Batman 66 on eBay that is roughly around $10,000. It was a few days ago. There's another Batman 66 LE that I saw on Pinside for, I believe, $9,800. I think that's kind of crazy to pay that for a used one. I sold mine for $12,000 cash. I made out well. I got out when the hype was high. Here's the thing, and this is just something that I don't know which way you think it's going to go. Do you think Lyman Sheets is going to be allowed, as George Gomez said, to focus solely on Batman 66 and no other titles until he finishes Batman 66? Or do you think Lyman Sheets is going to be forced off of that project to work on other things that Stern has coming out and will be forced to finish Batman 66 in his free time? Now, we all know some of the other games that Lyman Sheets finished in his free time turned out to be blockbusters, like The Walking Dead, right? These are games that they weren't coded properly or fully coded when they were released, and Lyman went back, and in his own time, he made the games the classic games they are now. Look, Batman 66 continues, in my mind, to be one of the biggest just sort of misses in recent Stern memory. And the reason I say that is it's just not done. And the other Stern games that came out around the same time, whether it's Ghostbusters, whether it's Aerosmith, those games all shipped with pretty complete code. And so Batman 66 just continues to be this game like waiting to wake up. And for those people owning it, I think patience is going to start to wear thin pretty soon, and owning one is just going to not be much fun unless this code gets finished sometime soon. I also hear like a lot of people are just disappointed in how Stern utilized the clips from the show and call outs and multi balls, and the way the game actually incorporates all that is not incredible. And I haven't played enough of this game to make up my own mind on it. I think that Batman 66 is just, you know, it's weird. I don't think they're selling, I don't think it's selling that well. I really don't see many people unboxing Batman 66 premiums, which is basically a pro model. I think the sales numbers of the game are going to be pretty low, and I think because of that, I would give some credibility to the fact that the financial people over at Stern and the decision makers are gonna force Lyman to move on to something that has a greater sales potential. He can't just spend all of his time on this game. But it also is the anniversary game, and there's so much pride behind it that for it to just remain half-baked for such a long time, it is embarrassing for Stern. But I'll say this too. It's only embarrassing for the Pinside guys and the hyper home collector who understands these nuances. The majority of people who play a Batman on location would have no clue that the game is not finished. And Stern also, they already have your money. See, here's the crazy part, right? They already have your money. So what do they care if there's a handful of people complaining in the Batman thread about Lyman potentially coming off the code? What do they care? You've already paid them. You have no leverage anymore once you pay Stern for that game. And as always, so many people in there are like, well, if Lyman came off it, I'm not going to go in on Star Wars. They don't care. All the threats of Pinside, we hear this every single new Stern launch. People make threats that they're not going to buy it unless this happens or that happens. And then what do? They go and buy it. And what they said needed to happen didn't happen. And they're like, well, now I'm not buying the next one. And what happens? They buy the next one. Simply because it's an addiction, it's a drug, this hobby, and no one else is providing games at any frequency right now. So you have to buy the next Stern, because chances are there's nothing else. All right. What else is going on in the Stern world? I want to say that the rumor is that the next Kapow license is going to be the Munsters. And this is the license that we heard is really difficult to nail down, and that's going to be it. So, I don't know. Munsters? Really? I don't get this theme at all. I think if they do make the Munsters, it will be very Batman 66-like. You're really going after the older end of your spectrum with your home collector. I still don't think Munsters even has the same appeal as Batman. It's like a niche within a niche within a niche. And if Kapow's doing it, is that going to be the next one that has like another Super LE? I think the Munsters is really a bad theme. I do, because I think while some people think it's cool, and I remember the show. I think it's too niche. I think it's too niche for Stern to sell a game like that in quantity. Now, again, like if Stern goes into it and says, we're going to make the Munsters and we're only going to make 500 and they're going to cost whatever, 10,000 each or 12,000 each, and there's going to be a Super Elite of like 50 of them, do I think they sell out? Yes, I do. But the thing is this, it needs to be very limited like that. See, the more niche you go, the more limited you have to go to create the demand and the hype at launch. I just think with a lot of these recent Sterns, the problem I have is nothing really appeals to the collector, because for me, a collectible game needs to be more than just a little bit of an art package and a signature or a different topper. I really do think the gameplay and the game itself needs to be limited to the collector's edition. That you shouldn't be able to play it everywhere. There shouldn't be thousands of that game available for mass consumption. That the LE, or the very limited one, should have some features in the game itself that are just not found anywhere else. Right? I mean, of course, Stern moved away from that because it's much cheaper and much easier just to change a bunch of decals on the side and some armor in the game, you know, than it is to actually give features that are exclusive to the LE owners. So I think the Munsters is pretty ridiculous of a theme. I don't think it would do well. I do put Munsters and like Alice Cooper like in that same realm of really niche, but not in the right kind of way. I think if people were honest, they both would say those themes are pretty small in terms of the audiences they'll reach, and nobody young would care about either one. I mean, these are not contemporary titles by any means. Okay, so what else is going on? I'm just going through PinSide now. I'm looking at the different threads that are popping up on the site. And for the most part, you know, there's just not a lot of news. Not a lot of news. I'm trying to set up interviews with the Mezzelmod folks. They're supposed to come on. Our friends at American Pinball are supposed to come on. I have invitations out to Mike from Home Pin. I even sent an email to the new investors at Highway Pinball. I basically said, look, I'm going to cut right to it. I didn't like Andrew Highway's business approach. I had called that he would drive the company into the ground, which he did. And I happily will give you guys the stage to talk about your new plans for Highway Pinball. I'll say this, and I can't reveal many more details, but there's an individual that Andrew Highway was working with that was lied to, that was misled, and this individual has a story that I think will once again show many of you out there that Andrew Highway should not be this person that we applaud, should not be this person that we say had a dream and he came so close and he almost got there. Andrew Highway is still someone that lied to a lot of people. He's still someone that misled many people. He lied to a lot of people that were also working on the Alien project, and he shouldn't show his face at pinball shows. He should have the same fate that John Papaduke has, which is he should be in exile. He should be ashamed of himself, and he should not show himself anywhere near pinball shows, pinball expos, or he should just go away. He did the same thing J-Pop did. He took your money. He lied to you. He drove the company into the ground, and he didn't deliver the machines he promised. Am I missing something? Those are the same exact things he did, right? I mean, Andrew Highway lied more publicly than John Papaduke ever did. In fact, I would say that Andrew Highway, because he's John, I honestly certifiably think John is a little bit crazy. I think John mentally is not all there. I really do. I mean, his craziness is what makes him like a creative genius. But I also think what J-Pop brings to pinball in terms of imagination and innovation and great art far surpasses any innovation Andrew Highway ever brought to pinball. But I think they're the same kind of wrong. I do. And the more people are starting to tell me things and share me additional stories about what Andrew Highway told them and how things went down, I just think the guy should go away. I think I was a little like disappointed when he said in his exit that he still wants to be part of pinball. We haven't seen the last of him. Andrew, I think we should have seen the last of you in pinball. You had your chance. You spent 5 years telling a bunch of tall tales about what Highway Pinball would be. None of it came true. You screwed people over, and you basically lost everybody's money, and you got bailed out. So why should we share beers and talk about pinball? Why should we see you at shows? You failed. You're done in pinball. You'll never be welcomed again in the pinball world. That's just the way it works. Isn't that how it works? Right? When you mess up something at work and your boss fires you, do they invite you back to the company parties? Do they want to see you on company grounds? No. So why should we see Andrew Highway at pinball parties? He was fired by the pinball world. He was fired by his own investors. He was fired, told to walk away. And that's the weird thing. It's like everyone always wants to feel like, it wasn't that big of a deal. It was a big deal. He lost a lot of people's money. And it's still not certain whether or not he will be able to deliver. I talked a lot about on my last podcast about perspective and sort of changing my perspective a little bit on pinball and pinball collecting and how when you don't chase after everything new, it kind of gives you a little bit more of a healthier perspective on the hobby. And I think the most healthy thing I've adopted over the last few weeks is just reading Pinside less and less. And it's really helped me focus more at work, be more productive at work, spend more time at the gym, spend more time doing stuff with Brenda. I don't hyper read the site anymore, and I really don't know how to because I really don't want to, because I just think there's it's just the same like 50 people talking to each other over and over and over again. I'm glad that a lot of you get your Pinside news from me, right? So I have to go in there and find stuff to relay back to you. But for the most part, I think Pinside is really becoming this, the whole thing is becoming a like pretty toxic site. And, you know, look, it's easily fixable. If they just did the purge they said that we're going to do, that site would do a 180 tomorrow. It would do a 180 tomorrow if they would do that. But, you know, look, right now we're in a lull. We're in a lull. You join this podcast, you listen to Kaneda talk on a weekly basis about pinball, and I wish I had more to tell you, right? I wish I had more to tell you. But we're all waiting for Star Wars. Star Wars kind of disappointed all of us to date. We're hoping the gameplay can change our minds. We see Dialed In shipping. We see Attack from Mars shipping. But there's been no real surprises. There's been no real unexpected occurrences. There's, you know, and that's, I think, where we're at. I mean, the summertime should be a time where I think more and more of us spend our time outdoors and not inside. Don't spend your time inside playing pinball when it's beautiful out. All of us, we have one go on this rock. And when nothing like a beautiful night to get out there and do something and see friends and bring family members out and have a barbecue or do whatever you need to do. But the last thing I really feel like doing in the summertime is like playing a lot of pinball. You know, it's just not top of mind for me. So I want to conclude this podcast by saying, look, I appreciate you guys for listening. I'm not going to turn back into old Kaneda who's just angry and ranting about the hobby. I do think making pinball is really hard. I think the margins on pinball machines are really low. I think most of you guys out there who collect all these new in-box LEs make more money than the designers at Stern, than Charlie makes, than Ben Heck makes, than all these guys make. I really think that there's a misconception by many people out there that this hobby is just like a money-making venture. And all these new pinball companies like have an opportunity to make millions. They don't. They really don't. And I think we see it with Dutch Pinball collapsing, with Highway Pinball collapsing, with Spooky Pinball barely making, what, like $1,000 a game. P3 still hasn't shipped. You know, the money's just not there. The money's not there. And you need to go high volume to make it even worthwhile for the most part. And that's where I think the hobby's at right now. I think you're going to see maybe 3 to 4 manufacturers survive into next year. And I think everybody else is really just going to go away. I mean, I've been predicting that for a long time. It pretty much come true. But I think more than ever, these companies need to have killer themes, put a magical world under the glass, and start to like think differently about pinball. And give us something that we never thought we'd see. I don't see a lot of that creativity. I don't. I see a lot of the same cookie cutter stuff. So hopefully the next series of games that comes out, Ben Heck's game, the next Stern games coming out, Jersey Jack number 4, hopefully these things really give us something we've never seen before in pinball. So that's it. That's episode, 136 of Kaneda's Pinball Podcast. I am your host, Kaneda. I enjoy talking to you on a weekly basis about pinball. I'm glad you listen. Send your feedback to kanedapinball@gmail.com. And if you're going to travel to the New York City area, someone hit me up. They're like, where should I go to play pinball in New York? Where should I go? Where should I go? Real simple. If you're going to be in New York, go to Sunshine. They have everything that you'd want. That is like the only place you really need to go to. After Sunshine, I mean, I think you're looking at Pioneer Bar, Pioneers, apostrophe S, Pioneers Bar, and Jack Bar. All right, those are like the three. Modern Pinball, I'm sorry, don't bother. Modern Pinball has no modern pinballs in it. They have like none of the new machines. The environment there, the whole sort of, it's just, it needs a whole revamping. There's no music going, there's no drinks to be had. It's just not fun. It's not fun. You walk by it, it's kind of like a pinball wasteland compared to the other offerings. So you heard it here. Go to Sunshine first, then Jack Bar and Pioneers. Those are the other ones I would go to. So have a good night. We'll talk to you soon. Play pinball. Play pinball more than reading Pinside. And go to the gym and eat healthy. I'm going to keep harping on that. All right, guys? Have a good night. I won't deny it. I'm a street fighter.